My friends, it's the week of the eclipse. This eclipse is wild, I will say. Like, I was reviewing the astrology of the eclipse, which is happening on the 28th, which I believe it is Saturday. Is the 28th Saturday? I could tell you the aspects on that day, but I couldn't tell you the day of the week. Yeah, I think the 28th is Saturday. So, you know, that meaning... Yeah, it's Saturday. Okay, thanks, Katie. So, you know, this week ahead, we're leading up to Samhain, which is New Year. Some may know it as Halloween. We're also leading up to the eclipse, the Taurus full moon eclipse on Saturday the 28th. So I would say this week is kind of building to an interesting astrological series of events that like starts to really amp up probably Thursday, Friday. Like, and I think that's important to know because it's always during eclipse season where clients start to DM me and they're like, what's going on, Mal? Or like friends I haven't talked to in like a couple months, they'll start texting me and be like, Mal, like something is up. And I'm like, yeah, eclipse season is up. Eclipse season is up. And on this past Friday night, I was at a wedding reception reading tarot. It was actually really sweet. My friend slash client, I've known her both since high school, but also we went to college together. And I was reading tarot at her wedding reception, and it was super fun. And I love reading it's like an interesting experimentation to read like that many back-to-back readings and see what cards are coming out for everybody. And I would say the top three cards, I should just pull them out because I think they're relevant to this week's eclipse. But statistically, the top three cards that kept coming out in everybody's reading was the Seven of Cups, the Five of Swords, and the Ace of Pentacles. Like, I swear, at least one of those cards came out in, like, pretty much every reading. Okay. But I think we need to, like, look at the pictures and just kind of consider the story that is being told, because I think the story that is being told with these cards is relevant. And so we've got, here we go. Okay, yeah, comment below, like, what's the story you see? Like, don't try to analyze like the meaning of the cards, but like, what's the story you see in the pictures? Like, 'cause I see Five of Swords kind of being like triggers of the past. Which is very eclipse season. Triggers of the past. There's some conflict that I have not completely marinated with. Or there's something in the present day that is mirroring a sort of triggering situation of the past, right? There's something coming up where I have the choice whether or not to, you know, work with this trigger and realize what it's trying to show me, which is very Five of Swords, or I can stay in the triggered state and sort of react, right? So that's kind of a Five of Swords-y kind of situation. And something I tell my tarot students is Five of Swords is very much a card of the past, because look at the image. The fight already happened, Like, we're not getting this fight in real time. We're getting this guy, you know, collecting his swords that he won after battling these two guys, right? So it's like, actually, Pamela Coleman Smith calls these guys the pirates. So, like, yeah, we're seeing the aftermath of this sort of pirates sword fight. Yeah, Jane, fighting your demons. Alexandra, you said Five of Swords victory doesn't give a shit anymore and ignores the triggers. Yeah, or, like, in the sense of, like, yeah, I think there is maybe a sense of this week where it's like, you know what? I don't care about this as much as I used to. I was just talking to one of my, like, Chicago artist friends, and she's directing a play right now, and it's her first time being, like, the official director. And she's like, thank God this happened when I'm, like, almost 40, because if this happened when I was 20, I would have been, like, so freaking out over everything and taking everything personally. But now in this point in my life, like, things don't bother me the same way as they did in my 20s, right? So it's very, like, choosing not to take something personally, right? Or, like, choosing not to care as much about how your choice, which is aligned for you, may be affecting someone else and triggering someone else. Yeah, that's hard. That's hard for, like, the recovering people pleasers, because sometimes eclipse season does require us to walk away, set a boundary, address something, choose our own selves, you know, in the situation. And sometimes when we do that, it boomerangs badly to the other party, because the other party might not be used to someone setting a boundary or whatnot, right? So, you know, there's something like that in the air, but what does the Five of Swords lead to? You know, Five of Swords leads to both the Seven of Cups and the Ace of Pentacles. So this, for me, relates to the astrology of the eclipse. And let's take a look at that. It's complicated. You know, the eclipse will perfect on the 28th, this Saturday, around, it'll be around like 4 p.m. Central. The moon will hit that fifth degree of Taurus, creating the full moon. And at the same time as this eclipse, we've already had this big thing that's happening. At the same time of the eclipse, Mercury, who is now in Scorpio, is approaching a conjunction with Mars in Scorpio. So we've got this Mercury-Mars conjunction also in opposition with Jupiter in Taurus. So we have this, like, double opposition going on. Every full moon is an opposition, right? We got the moon on one side of the spectrum, and we have the sun on the, in 180 on the other side of the spectrum. So that's the full moon, always in opposition. But then we have this double opposition a little bit, you know, to the side of this eclipse, which is the Mercury-Mars conjunction in Scorpio and Jupiter in Taurus. So what does this mean in English? You know, that's the math of it. I think it's a little complex to wrap into just a simple notion. That's the thing. Like, an eclipse is already a complicated and intense and loaded astrological event in itself. So, you know, the fact that this Mercury-Mars-Jupiter opposition is happening at the same time, there's, like, this double story going on. I'll go back to the Five of Swords. Something from the past is coming up. Someone's triggering us. Someone's irritating us. What's that that one like TikTok sound with Abby from Dance Moms, where she's like, I can't quite like quote it verbatim, but she's like, I've just been going on my own thing, and then I hear some irritating voice. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Can someone quote that TikTok sound in the comments? Because that's what this week kind of reminds me of. Like this sort of irritation that's kind of building, but then leads to a bit of a breakthrough. Because Seven of Cups and Ace of Pentacles feels to me like we're kind of back in a bit of an imaginative state where all things are possible again. And something I like to point out about the Seven of Cups, it is the only card, at least in the Rider-Waite-Smith depiction of the tarot, it's the only card that does not have a ground. Right? It has no ground. There's no mountain. There's no grass. There's no floor. Nothing. And what does that mean? Well, this is sort of this imaginatory image that nothing in this card is real. We have this cartoon figure. This is also the only figure in all of the 78 cards. Is that how many cards there are? Am I making that number up? The only card in the 78 cards that has this kind of shadow figure. All of the other people in all of the other pictures are like real people, right? But this is a card of imagination. It's a card of like coming back to the sort of the ethers. We're coming back to a state where nothing is formed. Yeah, Alexandra, that's so good. It's a thought bubble. It's an idea. This dude is having all of these new ideas of how to move forward and maybe has a renewed sense of energy with how to move forward, right? And I think that's where the Ace of Pentacles comes in. From the irritations, from the trigger point, I think we're able to shed something that does put us back in the Seven of Pentacles where nothing is formed. But perhaps that becomes a gift because then we're able to grasp or receive something that is aligned. Because the Ace of Pentacles, it's giving like hand of God. like the hand of God is coming in with something that we couldn't necessarily receive if we had stayed in the Five of Swords. You know, has anybody ever gone through a breakup where it correlated pretty like it was simultaneous, I can never say that word, simultaneous with a big moment in your life? Like for instance, like when I got accepted to do my Fulbright in Malaysia after college, that very much correlated with a breakup. And maybe this is like a, I don't know if this is like a woman thing, like, I don't know, men breaking up with, with women after there's like something big going on in their lives, like some sort of accomplishment. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But there's something here about like when something cracks, I'm able to receive the next thing. Or something cracks and I'm able to go back to the drawing board and do the thing or experiment with the thing that I've been thinking about all along. Okay. A good example of this. Now, I think probably the most important part of the chart to pay attention to this week is that Scorpio part of our chart. Technically, guys, if we really wanted to get like complicated, there's five houses that like are being directly affected by this eclipse, if you think about it. Because the full moon in Taurus, opposing Sun in Scorpio, that's your Taurus and Scorpio house. Then we've got the Mercury, Mars in Scorpio, opposing Jupiter in Taurus. Again, your Scorpio and Taurus axis in your chart. The eclipse itself, the nodes themselves, which kind of cause the eclipse. An eclipse happens because the lunation takes place within 15 degrees of the lunar nodes. The lunar nodes are in Aries and Libra. So that's Aries and Libra. So now we've got Taurus and Scorpio part of our charts, the Libra Aries part of our charts. And then if we really want to get complicated too, we could say this eclipse is ruled by Venus. Moon and Taurus. Who's ruling Moon and Taurus? It's Venus. Where's Venus? Virgo. So if we really want to get investigative, which is very Mars and Scorpio, we really want to investigate this story, we're going to be looking at Aries house, Libra house, Scorpio house, Taurus house, and Virgo house in our charts. We're not going to get too that complicated today. For me, my intuition is like, okay, I actually think the biggest thing is that Scorpio house this week. And I think that could be where the cracking is happening. This sort of moment of, okay, what trigger, what irritation is kind of forcing me to set a boundary or forcing this thing to crack? And, you know, how does that cracking lead me back to my imagination? What is not tangible? And then how does that then lead me to God's hand, God handing me that new opportunity, right? For me, I expected, because my fifth house is Scorpio, right? So it's a very fifth house vibe for me at the moment. And I'm in a fifth house year. And what is the fifth house? It's like romance, pleasure, sex, dating. But it's also creativity. It can be childbearing, if that's your thing. And I so expected this time to be a little bit more about like dating for me. And I'm actually shocked how much, I shouldn't be shocked, but like no one's really like holding my interest right now. And there really is not much romantic themes coming up, and I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, well, this thing is happening in the fifth house, like what could it be? And then I like had this epiphany yesterday. I was like, oh yeah, what could it be? You're literally teaching a course right now about rediscovering your creativity. Like, that is so fifth house. And I was like, oh my god, I hadn't made that connection yet. Like, that's sort of like, this is the eclipse for me, that Scorpio influence of the eclipse. I'm like, holy shit, like I'm actually having a creative rebirth right now, which I'm shocked at. Guys, I'm shocked. Like, for the past, really since like 2018, haven't really written anything. I hate poetry at least once a week for the past 5 years. If you didn't know, in college, one of my focuses was like poetry and creative writing. So, and after college, I applied to go get my MFA in creative writing. Didn't get into any of the schools, but I got the Fulbright to Malaysia, so I ended up going to Malaysia. But anywho, like, there was a period of time where I was, like, very serious about my writing and my poetry. And, you know, there's a series of events that really boiled down to me, like, starting to resent and be irritated by, like, the creative process in general. And it really wasn't until I met Sarah, my friend, my co-teacher with this creative semester, it really wasn't until I met Sarah where I started to think, like, maybe there could be a different chapter of my creativity that doesn't include me, like, huffing and puffing around and saying, I hate poetry. Keep that shit away from me. And it's so wild, because lately I just read a poem by, from Louise Gluck, cause she passed away this week. And I was like, oh my God, I like actually enjoyed reading that poem. Like, it was great. It was amazing. Louise Gluck. Like, I haven't been in awe of Louise Gluck in like 5 years, more than 5 years. And yeah, so like, that's what's cracking for me. Now when it does come to the cracking, a big part of my like loss of joy for my creative journey with like being a poet, being a writer had to do with, kind of a falling out I had with a writing mentor who was like heavily influential to my path as a creative, especially in high school and college. And after we kind of had a falling out, that's when I was like, I'm done. Like, I don't even want to touch this shit anymore. And now I'm kind of developing a new relationship with that too. Because this writing mentor really showed me a lot of the things that I love about poetry. You know, he introduced me to like poetry that rhymes and made me really interested in sounds and really made me interested in like poetic form and like was very influential in that regard. So it's almost like I couldn't read the poetry that I love and am inspired by without also thinking to like the pain of this sort of falling out with my writing mentor, which happened a long time ago. It's very strange to me how this eclipse is highlighting that. It shouldn't be, but it is, because I didn't expect it. Which is kind of an eclipse thing, right? Like, sometimes it highlights something that we didn't expect. Now, that, what I just stated, can kind of be the beginning of some rising sign forecasts that I'm going to do. Cancer risings, that was yours. Cancer risings, that was your rising sign forecast, like fifth house Scorpio. You know, how is your relationship to your creativity potentially changing? I guess for some Cancer risings, it could be about dating as well. It could be about romance. Yeah. For me, like, people are just so irritating. I can't. People are just so irritating to me. I don't even know. Like, maybe this is me projecting, but like in the dating sphere, I'm like, what is, I hesitate to say like the phrase, what is wrong with you? Because that is a phrase that I don't think is, I don't know. Like, I think it's kind of hurtful, but at the same time, that this is a phrase that I often think, if I'm being honest. So especially when it comes to dating and blah, blah, blah. But I think, Emmy, you said, on the opposite end, the 11th house for Cancer risings is networks, mentors, and Emmy, you said you pulling yourself away from networking, becoming an individual. And then Lauren, you said Cancer rising here. Of course, my relationship to creativity is changing as I launch my book. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So this checks out. Let's go to the Leo risings, because Leo, it's kind of that fourth house, 10th house thing going on. Scorpio in the fourth house, Taurus in the 10th house. That's where the full moon is. So fourth house, house of the home, family. I think for Leo risings, there could be some individuating from the home life. There could be some sort of, I gotta go my own way when it comes to like what my parents want for me versus what I want for me, right? Scorpio in the fourth house of the home can be kind of volatile, and it can be hard to like sort of emotionally disconnect from the like psychological undertones of the family system. And I think this eclipse, there's something about it that helps you potentially separate from maybe some psychological undertones of the family system that you no longer want to carry with you. Now, Virgo rising, this is interesting because it's like the eclipse is a third house, ninth house thing. Scorpio is your third house, right? So that's the way we think, the way we communicate. Out of everybody, the Virgo risings are really having an intense conversation this week. You know, like there's something that the Virgo risings need to say. It kind of relates though. I mean, Virgo risings, you've got Venus and Virgo in the transiting the first house right now. And remember, Venus in Virgo is the ruler of this eclipse. So, you know, whatever you're saying has to do with your identity. It has to do with, like, who you are. It has to do with your morals, your values, your sort of, your path itself. It has to do with this individualization. So it's like you're communicating. Maybe you're communicating, I'm leaving this situation. Maybe you're communicating something needs to change. Maybe you're even communicating with yourself. Like, why do you keep dabbling in this if it only causes you irritation? Oh my God. Virgos really crack me up. I saw my best friend on Thursday, who's a Virgo. She lives in Arizona. And yeah, she's funny. She cracks me up with her Virgo irritations. But like, I always stand up for Virgos. I really do. Like, and I know not everybody will, but for me, like, I think I understand Virgos in the sense of like, they're trying, like, they really do see the best way to do something. So they are irritated more often than the other signs, because for them, like, everybody's doing things wrong because they could be doing something more efficient. Yeah, like they could be doing something more efficiently, but because nobody's doing that, it's annoying to them, you know? So that's the tea with the Virgo risings. And now Libra risings, Scorpio is your second house of money and personal resources and talents. There could be like some budgeting stuff going on this week for the Libra risings, but I'm thinking about how this is connected to the eighth house too. So the second house is your money. The eighth house is other people's money. The second house is your resources. The eighth house is other people's resources. So I'm wondering if there's something, some sort of compromise or some sort of illumination that is being reached by, you know, there's something about disconnecting from someone else's resources in order to be on your own, or there could be a harmonization with someone else's resources that also benefits both them and you. Kind of a funny example of this. I was with my Libra rising friend last night, and they told me that they had to get their own phone plan because their mom didn't want to pay for their phone anymore. So they disconnected from their mom's phone plan, and then they hopped on their partner's phone plan. And I was like, that's kind of like second house, eighth house kind of stuff, right? It's like the shared resources versus individual resources. Again, like a minor example of that. But yeah, for the Libra risings, there could be something literal or metaphorical. Like, I'm disconnecting from the family phone plan and getting my own phone plan. What is that for you, right? So Scorpio risings. So this is interesting for sure. You know, I think the Scorpio risings, you know, again, this week, eclipse in the seventh house of relationships. And then we've got that Mercury-Mars conjunction in the first house of identity. Yeah, I mean, like, first, I don't know if it's necessarily breakup vibes for the Scorpio risings. Like, maybe some Scorpio risings, sure. It could be like, I need to go on my path as an individual, and like, you're really like harshing my vibe, you know, and like, I can't actually be on my aligned path with this person. That could be it for some Scorpio risings. But I mean, for the Scorpio risings who are happily partnered, I think this could still be choosing your path, and then by default, there's a shift that happens for your partner, right? Like, I was just talking to someone the other day who's like gonna apply for their PhD, and if they get the PhD stuff, then their partner has to quit their job and move to wherever they're gonna get their PhD, right? And like, that's kind of like a first house, seventh house eclipse. Like, my path of my own self-actualization is affecting my partner. And maybe that's a good thing, and maybe that's a thing that causes tension. But could be a good thing, right? But there is something very partnershipy, or how my individual path is affecting my close relationships for the Scorpio risings, okay? Now, Sagittarius rising, Scorpio is your 12th house, right? So this eclipse, very illuminating. I mean, think of the Mars-Mercury conjunction that's building this week that will perfect on Sunday. So it'll perfect a week from now. I mean, Mars-Mercury conjunction in the 12th house, like, that's like a breakthrough in therapy that like changes your life. You know, not to put too much weight on it, but like that's like facing something that you've been avoiding. Revealing a secret that you never wanted to tell. But now that you tell it, it's life-changing. It's illuminating. There's a breakthrough here psychologically at the deepest part of, you know, our shadow selves even. So it's interesting, there. Like, okay, so like Mercury and Mars together is kind of like surgery. Mars being like cutting and like sharp objects, and then Mercury being the attention to detail. So a lot of surgeons actually have Mars Mercury in their chart. But at the same time, like, I have Mars Mercury in my chart. It's an opposition. It's not a conjunction, but still, like, okay, an astrologer is like a surgeon of the psyche, right? In some way. Yeah, so there's some kind of like soul surgery kind of for the Sagittarius risings. That's interesting. Now, Cap risings, Scorpio's your 11th house, networks. And then it's opposing that creative journey in the fifth house. So for what I said about the Cancer risings, there could be some overlaps for the Capricorn risings. But maybe the Capricorn risings are actually, you know, going to some kind of community meetup this weekend or finding some sort of networking event that helps them move forward. You know, meeting a really important mentor or person that is going to help them on their career path or help them on their path of success. That's how I feel about the Capricorn risings. Something important happening there. Also, the ruler of the eclipse, again, is Venus in Virgo, which is currently transiting the ninth house for Capricorn risings. So again, there's something like mentor vibes with that. There's something like I'm learning something new. I'm meeting a teacher, or I'm joining a class, or I'm going to a meetup. Like there's something like that. It's almost like the Capricorn risings really need community right now in order to sort of move forward in some way. Like they need the community reflection. Yeah. Aquarius rising. Scorpio is your 10th house. This is how you're being seen in public, right? I would say especially for the Aquarius risings, I would say maybe be mindful this week of what you say in public. You know, I would say, you know, seeing that Mercury and that Mars conjunction in the 10th house of career and public reputation. You know, like a zoomed out example would be like we see a politician who says something like super dumb that they never, you know, they're never going to live it down. On the same end though, we could see someone, a public figure, saying something like really deeply important, right? Like with the Aquarius risings, like maybe it's like speaking out, I don't know, like speaking out when it comes to like the Palestinian genocide, like speaking out when it comes to like political tension in the world right now, or, you know, like there's something important that has to be said at the same time. So maybe it's for Aquarius risings, it's figuring out, can I say this thing with that has so much importance? Can I say it in a way that challenges and leads to change instead of offending and sort of burning bridges? I think that may be it for the Aquarius risings. Pisces rising. We've got the Scorpio ninth house. Oh, that's so funny. I know a Pisces rising who is traveling right now. Ninth house to travel. So this is like, I'm having important realizations about my life, my individuality, my process. I'm having important reflections sort of illuminated back to me as I immerse myself in other cultures, other belief systems, other places. If any Pisces risings do have the opportunity to travel this week, do it. I think it would be like pretty illuminating in some way. If it's not physical travel, perhaps it's more that kind of like mental or philosophical travel that also helps us see things from a new lens. Some Pisces risings could be taking a class right now, like a metaphysical class could be really cool right now, or like learning something about metaphysics. This transit reminds me of one of my favorite books called The Miracle Club by Mitch Horowitz. So I don't know. Maybe read that. Maybe check that out at the library. Aries rising. We've got that Mars-Mercury conjunction in Scorpio in the eighth house of other people's resources. This is the house of mortality and grief, and it's also the house of inheritance. For some Aries risings, death could be a theme. I'm not predicting that someone's gonna die this weekend. It's not that. If anything, it probably already happened. And now it's sort of like coming into the sort of, I don't know if it's like the aftermath or the grieving process. That could be the case for some Aries risings, not all. Other Aries risings may be grappling with how to set boundaries with the resources that they're sharing with others. Maybe you have been helping a friend, or like maybe you loaned money to a sibling, or maybe someone needs help and you're trying to figure out your boundaries with the situation. And that doesn't even have to be a monetary thing too. It could be an emotional thing. You know, with the eighth house, there's financial inheritance and taxes, loans, insurance, real money stuff, but there's also emotional energy in the eighth house too. So there could be some kind of transmutation of the emotional aspect of things. The eighth house is why, you know, when someone dies and they're like, don't make any rash decisions after someone dies, like don't sell your house or whatever. And it's interesting because my grandma, she always calls me on the phone and she's always like, my biggest regret is selling my condo in Florida after her daughter died, my Aunt Diana, which she died, I don't know, maybe it's close to 10 years ago now. But yeah, my grandma sold her condo in Florida after that happened for whatever reason. And it's a very eighth house thing, right? Because like the emotions of losing a child were like basically 100% influential behind her decision to sell the Florida condo, right? So like there's something there about like, what are the emotional underpinnings of my financial decisions for the Aries risings? Okay. Taurus risings, we've got that Scorpio seventh house of relationships. So yeah, there's something, I think there might be something your partner's saying to you. There's like news from your partner that's now, it's like the news or the thing from your partner is now hitting something into your court and you're choosing how to respond. Maybe your partner says, I got a new job, but it's in California and you both live in New York. You know, it's like someone's hitting the ball to you and now you're grappling with how to respond. And there's some kind of rebirth of the identity too with Taurus in general, just having Jupiter in Taurus in the first house. And also Uranus has been in the first house. So for a while, since 2018. So I mean, Taurus risings have been under the pressure cooker of change, transformation, sort of this identity crisis vibe for a while. And maybe that identity crisis vibe has actually forced Taurus to become more comfortable with change in some way, okay? Have a better relationship with change. Now, lastly, for the Gemini risings, It's that Mars-Mercury conjunction in Scorpio in the sixth house. Any Gemini risings here? What's going on at work? I want to know what's going on at work for the Gemini risings. Because the sixth house is like our place of employment. You know, it's like our coworkers, our office. It's what's going on with our boss. If we're the main boss, it's what's going on with our employees. you know, yeah, there's something like, I don't know, for some Gemini risings, it's kind of an office vibe. Oh, Pam. Okay, good, good, good. This makes sense because, Pam, you're kind of like an entrepreneur in a way, like a sole proprietor. But I know that you're, you know, figuring out like who's the ally in my, you know, yeah, who are my alliances to help me move forward in my career? Thank you. Yeah, so like that's very sixth house in a lot of ways. Now you have other things going on in the 11th house too. So, you know, it's specific to you, but you're a good example of that approaching Mars-Mercury conjunction in the sixth house. Someone important, like you're communicating with someone important in the workplace, right? Or you're communicating with, or someone is communicating with you. Like you're receiving an important message at the office, metaphorically, I think. And that goes for most Gemini risings here. There's an important message at the office that you are receiving, and or there's an important announcement at the office that you are making. So yeah, there's something there that feels like it's building this week. And at the same time, I think with that Taurus 12th house of the subconscious, you know, your relationship to fear is changing because 12th house is our fear house. But I wonder how this moment can be a teacher of not taking things personally and not buying into our fear stories so deeply. And I wonder how this moment in the workplace could be a little bit about facing an important fear for our soul's growth and our soul's journey. Okay. Okay, my friends, that's my eclipse journey for this week ahead. I do want to pull something else for our like ending. I'm not going to do individual polls this morning. I'm going to save my voice for highly sensitive person reunion, me and the highly sensitive person class from, what was that? That must've been like summer 2021. We still get together, have reunions. So I want to save some of my energy to be present during that. But I don't know where any of my decks are. Hang on. Like, where is my... Here they are. I was like... Okay. Let's do sacred symbols for our oracle card. Heather, you said, thank you for your energy as always. This was what my soul needed today. Aw. Thanks for being here, Heather. This deck, Sacred Symbols Oracle by Marcella Kroll... Such an OG oracle deck, and also it really does give spooky season, gives like Halloween vibes. This year for Halloween, so I'll just spoil it right now. My costume is I'm gonna be a Taurus. If you didn't know, I've been doing this for like 2 years now. I've decided every year for Halloween for the next like 10 years, I'm going to be each of the signs. So I think, yeah, I must have started in 2021. I was a Scorpio. And then in 2022, I was a Leo. And then this year, I'm going to be a Taurus. And what's so funny is about me being a Taurus is I'm going to go over to my two Taurus friends party this Saturday. But, like, the party is very low-key. Like, it's, like, solely for the people who, like, don't want to leave the house on Halloween. So I'm literally gonna wear my Taurus costume to their house and, like, probably, like, do a puzzle and watch a movie and just, like, chill out. So, like, there's no true going out vibes for me this Halloween, which honestly is so, that's completely fine with me. I mean, and I don't even know what sign I'll be next year, but it seems like every time I embrace the sign, it actually ends up relating to the Halloween vibe in some way. So yeah, that's my Halloween costume. You can see the full thing. I'll post it. I'll post it this weekend. Okay, so the cards that we got from the Sacred Symbols Oracle, we have the Challenge card, which is transformation. It has a butterfly on it. And then we have the Challenge and the Medicine, which is the Safe Travel card. And we have, like, the arrows pointing us in a new direction. So, I mean, could we get any more eclipse-y? The Challenge is transformation and the Medicine is safe travel. I mean, like, yeah, like, things are changing and things are moving forward. And eclipses move us forward regardless of whether we wanted it or not. So I think there could be some fear when it's coming to moving forward. There could be some fear when it comes to embracing this change that, you know, is on our docket right now. But at the same time, I think deep down we know it's going to be good. Because sometimes when we're going through a big change, actually most of the time, like, most of the time, deep down, our soul knows something is right, but yet we have anxiety about it. And why is that? Well, the soul knows it's right, and deep down, we're going to head towards that direction, but heading that towards that direction makes our nervous system deeply uncomfortable, which is why I don't think anxiety is always a good pointer when it comes to not doing something. You know, and, like, for me, it's not necessarily a question of anxiety versus intuition. For me, it's more like good anxiety versus bad anxiety. Like, it's deciphering, is this the kind of anxiety that comes up because I'm making a change that is in alignment, and I know deep down it's in alignment, but it's making me deeply uncomfortable. So I'm having anxiety. My nervous system is freaking out because I'm expanding. There's that kind of anxiety, and I think that's okay. Or there's this deep gut-wrenching anxiety that, like, you shouldn't do it. Or, like, a deep gut-wrenching anxiety that's like, this is not for me, and it's causing me, like, almost like a panic. I think that's the kind of anxiety that's misaligned, right? And it's really learning to tell the difference. And at this point in my life, I think I've learned to tell the difference. So that's usually my answer when it comes to people saying, like, what's the difference between anxiety and intuition? It's not the right question for me. It's like, what's the difference between these anxieties that I'm having? Heather, you said, the place I'm moving, the house that you're moving towards it's your roommate's mom's birthday today who passed away. And I've been asking if this move was okay with her and having her symbol of the butterfly pop up. Oh, that's so sweet. I love that message from the ancestors, Heather. And Emma, you said, I definitely agree and relate with the good anxiety and learning to tell the difference. Totally. Yeah. Okay, friends. Collect your eclipse stories. Bring them back to Witch Church because I'll be interested. And yeah, just know, you know, this, yeah, this you know, astrology this week is pretty complex and intense, which means that the situations arising may feel complex and intense. So yeah, just observe as much as possible. It's easy to react pretty intensely with that Mercury Mars conjunction in Scorpio. But yeah, I think if we can observe and make the change, you know, in a more wisdom filled way, that's probably the best route, right? Okay, friends, thanks for coming. So fun to see ya. And we'll talk next time.